From the Palestine News Network, I'm Kristen S. with This Week in Review for the last week of February 2009. The threat to East Jerusalem is rising again this week, with the E1 scheme preventing natural growth of villages such as Ezawiya, Ezariya, and Abu Dis, while making room to expand the settlement of Ma'ali Ad-Dumim, illegal under international law as all settlements are. The Americans shook yet another public fist at the Israelis for their illegal settlement policy, which is continuing unabated, not only in the north and east of East Jerusalem, but also south of Al-Aqsa Mosque in Silwan's Al-Bustan area, where residents are not only literally sinking, but are being forcibly evicted. A little girl still has a scarring cut and bruise on her head and leg from injuries when the United Nations Relief and Works Agency school partially collapsed due to Israeli excavations under the Al-Aqsa Mosque area. First day back from vacation, we were at the school, back to school, and we saw the floor sinking. The first teacher came, second teacher, third teacher, and they said to one to go to tell the director of the school. She went and she spoke to the school director, and the ground gave out below us. We were screaming and crying. Then my dad came, and he took me out and the other injured kids out of the school. We didn't talk to anyone. We just went in the ambulance. The girl's dad is as frustrated with the lack of action on the part of the United Nations when the school collapsed as he is with the Israelis who are digging under his land.
Mama, Baba, Mama, Baba.
The girl was crying when she came running home. Mama, Baba, she was really afraid. There was blood coming from her head and her leg, and she was crying. I ran over to the school and saw the situation there. I asked the director what happened. The general manager was also there from the UNRWA with a digital camera and was taking pictures of the school. There was another one with a Jeep there marked United Nations, looking at the girls and talking to the teacher. I asked the teacher, the director, and the general manager, what happened? They said, oh, nothing. It's like what happened in Gaza. I said, they're at war. We're not at war here. He described the conditions of the school and his house and other houses in Silwan as being in a near-constant state of earthquake due to the Israeli tunneling and excavations, where nothing is solid. 40 houses, at least, are collapsing. When an earthquake occurs, 5 or 6 points on the Richter scale, no one stays in the house. Everyone goes outside, because outside there is security. Inside the house, there is no security. The man, who will not be named for fear of repercussions, says he hears the tunneling, but he does not see it. For me, or any person living here in the Silwan area, we can't see what's happening under the land. I can't go there. It's forbidden for me as a Palestinian to go under and look at what's happening. I can't see the tunnels, but I can hear them. I haven't seen with my eyes, but I've heard with my ears. I can't go as a citizen, nor can the Al-Aqsa Foundation, but I hear the sound at night. They're here, 200 meters, 300 meters, but I can't see it. I can only hear it. East Jerusalem's Silwan neighborhood is now under a new threat as 90 families were given eviction notices this week. The local council, the Palestinian Authority, and activist groups are all concerned not only for the destruction of more of the cultural heritage of the Holy City as the Israelis quicken the pace of Judaization, but also the rendering of 1,500 Palestinians homeless. The Silwan resident and I stand on the roof of his house with a perfect view of the black dome of Al-Aqsa Mosque and the hill leading down into Silwan's Wadi Hello, the Sweet Valley. There is a tent down in Wadi Hello, down there. It's called a sit-in tent. And there are always guys in it holding meetings. But it doesn't make any difference. Think about the Arabic saying, water will remain water. It's not rocks, it's not nuts, it's water. And it will remain water. It will stay water. What the Israelis want will happen. What the Americans want will happen. What Britain wants will happen. The Americans gave the okay to the Israelis, gave them the green light, and that's what will happen. And they pay them $3 billion a year. Plus Britain gives them money. The whole world helps them. Meanwhile, the United States says it will pay $900 million to help reconstruction in the Gaza Strip that was destroyed by weapons it gave to the Israelis, which even Amnesty International admits. The donor conference set for the second in Sharm el-Sheikh is giving the same assurances as the U.S. None of the funds will go toward the democratically elected Hamas government, but instead will be used in part to boost the Western-backed Palestinian Authority. At the same time, the Palestinian Authority's Fatah and the Hamas government's Hamas are in the throes of national reconciliation talks. Amjad al-Shawa of the Palestinian NGOs Network is in Gaza City. Amjad al-Shawa, the director of the Palestinian Network of NGOs in Gaza City. I want to talk to you today about the current state of affairs in the Gaza Strip. Today are the Hamas-Fatah meetings in Cairo. The negotiations with the Israelis were postponed indefinitely after several slaps in the face to the Egyptian leadership who were mediating those talks. And also, the Israelis continue to control the amount of humanitarian aid that gets into the Strip. Reconstruction materials were named at being $900,000 in a donation from the Americans, who Amnesty International said supplied the weapons to the Israelis for the destruction of the Strip. All of this is happening at once. A lot of the basic issues are getting left behind, such as how are the people living? How is the water supply that's been in peril for the last 2 years? How is the electricity? How is the food? How is the life, the schools, the streets?
First, let's say that the issue of reconstruction of Gaza, the recovery of Gaza Strip after the Israel war and the Palestinian people in Gaza Strip, it's connected completely to the Palestinian reconciliation, to the Palestinian dialogue, to the Palestinian unity, and second, to end the siege on Gaza Strip. There is no meaning for any effort on this direction, on the issue of reconstruction, without ending the siege, reopening the crossings, and the second issue, which is the Palestinian unity. And recently, you know, after the war, Israel continued imposing the siege and the closure. We are suffering about of that for 20 months. Just few items of food that's allowed to get in Gaza, but you can imagine just 120 trucks load getting Gaza Strip on time on December 2005, 700 trucks load. From hundreds of items we're getting Gaza. Now we are just talking about less than 10 items of food getting Gaza on time. There is no cooking gas getting Gaza, no spare parts for the water wells to pump water, no spare parts, electricity generators.
And at the same time, the Israelis claimed that they were bombing the southern Gaza Strip's Rafah because of tunnels used for smuggling weapons. That's a twofold issue. One, it is the right of any occupied population to defend itself with arms or without arms, and so that should not be a major issue. But secondly, those tunnels were actually the lifeline for Palestinians inside the Gaza Strip who were suffering under siege. What came through those tunnels? Cows for food, gas to run cars, cooking, heating, basic necessities, including cigarettes, including medicines, including gum for children, candy, the basic staples of life that anyone would find in a shop in the Gaza City were brought in through those tunnels. And now those tunnels are under increased threat at the same time that the Israelis are using this as a sort of media campaign to suggest that they are stopping this so-called weapons smuggling. What is the situation there right now today?
The situation right now, 1 hour ago, there was an airstrike on the border between Gaza and Egypt targeting the tunnels between Gaza Strip and Egypt. Second, the point that Israel, still the occupying power, Gaza under occupation, legally and physically, and there must be commitment, according to international humanitarian law, towards the Palestinian civilians here. So the Israel violating the basic humanitarian conventions and not allowing the workers of relief workers and relief to get in Gaza, and nowadays fact-finding committees in Gaza to follow the issue of the Israeli war crimes committed in the Palestinians, and we have the hope that the Israeli war criminals will go to international courts in order to get the punishment to the crimes that committed on the Palestinian civilians.
At the same time that people are waiting again for the International Criminal Court to be honored, waiting again for United Nations resolutions to be honored, waiting again for international law to be paid any sort of attention to, the situation on the ground is obviously becoming worse. And once a situation is so devastated, it takes a lot to build it back up. The Gaza Strip has been put in the position now, due to siege and due to the major attacks, as being a place that essentially in the eyes of the international community cannot take care of itself, which is, of course, the opposite. The truth of the situation is that the Israeli occupation forces are who caused this general need and general reliance on international aid and the donor countries, which will be meeting on the 2nd of March in Sharm el-Sheikh.
Regarding the Sharm el-Sheikh conference, of course, there is no real participation of the civil society organization. Already we have a position regarding the conference and the plan which will be presented there. There is no real consultation with the Palestinian civil society in this plan, which will be presented by Ramallah government. And we really are looking forward to the dialogue between the Palestinian political parties in Rafah and in Egypt in order to conclude a real agreement which will help leading a national committee to reconstruct the Gaza Strip after the war and the destruction resulted in the war.
Amjad Al-Shawa, director of the Palestinian Network of NGOs in Gaza City, can you leave us with just one quick personal story that you have, either from your own family or from your neighbors, about what their situation is right now as the siege continues?
You know, in Gaza Strip, from the 1.5 million Palestinians, each one, male and female, young, old, child, has a story, result of the Israeli occupation, war crimes committed in Gaza. No one was safe on that war, although that you were in your home, in the hospital, in the street, wherever you were, you are not safe. And still, that each one is carrying stories to tell. And personally, I have many, about 100 meters of my home, there was in a place which was targeted 5 times by the F-16 jet fighters, where my house, we were in danger, really. My children, I had no place to get out from my home. The windows were broken, and we were in catastrophic conditions since there wasn't electricity, no water, for more than 20 days.
Let me ask you, my friend, Amjad Al-Shawaf, what happened after that? Were you able to repair the windows? I know that reconstruction materials are in general banned from entering this strip, and that has in the past included cement and glass. Are those bans lifted at this point?
Still, we are covering the windows with nylon coverage, so it's very difficult to find in Gaza glass to repair your windows, or wood to repair your doors, or a cement to rebuild your house. So still the reconstruction materials is prevented to enter Gaza, and these needs are not entering through the tunnels.
And this is under the confines of the so-called ceasefire by the Israelis, who are, in the eyes of the international media, not conducting major attacks against the Gaza Strip. Amjad Al-Shawa, Palestinian Network of NGOs, director in Gaza City, thank you so much for taking your time to speak with me this afternoon. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye-bye.
This week, a young woman was released from Israeli prison where she was put at 19 years old in 2002. It was during the major Israeli attacks on the West Bank that she made her decision to carry out a sacrificial operation. She left her home in Bethlehem's Beit Sahur after weeks of contemplation during the 41-day Israeli siege on the Church of Nativity. But, as she said, for her own humanity, she changed her mind and took her finger away from the detonator and returned home. Israeli forces found out anyway about her aborted intention and arrested her. I sat down with Arina Wad Shabet in an open-air home, stone gardens on either side, as an aunt, cousin, grandmother, and her mom muddled around the house. In the corner of her bedroom was a blue and white traditional stitch frame holding a mirror and two throw pillows. She made them during 7 years in prison. I'm in the house of Arin Awad Shabat in Beit Sahur. Alhamdulillah Salama. Welcome back after 7 years in Israeli prison.
Thank you. I welcome you in my home.
Do you want to talk about how you ended up in the Israeli system as a Palestinian political prisoner?
They catch me because I went to make a sacrificial operation in the middle of Tel Aviv. After a week, they catch me in my home.
And can you describe the conditions, not just the physical conditions, but how were you feeling?
I was thinking in that time that this is the only way I have to defend my home from the occupation, defend my people, defend my thoughts. Many thoughts come through my mind. One of them that this is the last moment I see the world, I see the people, and I don't know where I will go, who will I see, how is the life after death. I don't know, many questions cross my mind. But while I was walking, I saw baby. And this is the only reason who makes me come back and not forbid me to make anything. I look at him and I look at his mom or her mom, I don't know. I became thinking he has the right to live. As me, as everyone, and no one has the right to finish the other's life. So because of that, many thoughts, and after a time, I said, no, I will never do this.
You were wearing a backpack, and where was the detonator?
In my hand.
And how would you have detonated that? With your thumb?
Yes.
So before you went to Tel Aviv with the backpack, with a detonator held in your hand, ready to die, what is it that you were ready to die for?
Everything happened since Israeli's Prime Minister Sharon came to Aqsa. The humiliation we was treated as a Palestinian, the occupation, how it's impossible to reach my university, although the 5 minutes or 10 minutes and I will be there. In that time, I couldn't, because there is many checkpoints, there is a bad soldiers, say very bad words, and the invasion on my country, Bethlehem, and Jenin, Nablus, Ramallah.
This was early on in the Second Intifada.
Yes, yes. And all the international community was just sitting and saying no word to the Israelis government.
What was the most important motivator as far as your feelings were concerned? You talked about the humiliation.
I can't forget those people who was under arrest in the Nativity Church. And there is 13 of them outside the country now. And there is many of them in Gaza Strip now. They can't come back to their country, to Bethlehem. It was a very difficult days. Every day and every night, you woke up and sleep hearing the shots and bombs everywhere, killing anybody they want to kill. This was a psychological pressure. It was very bad. To live in jail, it's very difficult. You have to face the Israelis, the police, every day. Maybe one day we'll have a problem, which has happened with me. You can't do anything. Just only dream of the day that you will set free. We try to change this life. And we succeeded in that. We had a demand and many sacrifice. We pay many sacrifice to achieve our demands. One of them, to have a library, have the right to read whatever we want, and to keep the light on until the time we decide that we want to turn it off. It was forbidden. and to get out of the rooms 3 hours a day, which was refused. Many times there was a girls taken from, isolate them to a solitary confinement. And we stopped eating and drinking anything, only water, for 17 days.
Those were some of the highlights for the week of the 20th through the 26th of February 2009. For more news, see english.pnn.ps. I'm Kristen S. with engineers Shadaz Rishmawi and Samir Saad, Palestine News Network.